Next, we're going to learn about state politics. It was the second special session that just ended this week in Minnesota. Walker Ornstein reports on state politics for MinnPost. Walker, thanks for being back with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Well, okay, so let's talk about the origins of the criminal justice reform bill that passed earlier this week. So they began talking about this in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd during the regular session, then again in the first special session. Tell us about what happened, why it didn't progress in either of those places.
Yeah, so in the first special session, Democrats had this sort of expansive bill. It had, you know, I think about two dozen measures that would change policing in the state, you know, things like that we've talked about, that have been talked about a lot, like banning chokeholds and neck restraints, but also more controversial measures like giving the Attorney General's office the primary power to prosecute police when an officer kills somebody in the line of duty, things like that. They wanted to sort of end like a lot of facets of the cash bail system, things like that. Senate Republicans, they countered with a more narrow bill. You know, they had some mental health and autism training. They also banned most chokeholds and neck restraints. They wanted to add a couple of citizen members to our state's police licensing board. It's called the Post Board. And they had these lengthy negotiations. They finally traded some offers at the end of like a week-long special session. It went late into the night, but they ultimately couldn't really come up with any compromise. So that left lawmakers basically negotiating in private after that for a while. But it seemed like for a time that this issue might just get kicked to the November election, that, you know, they'd come back in 2021 and whoever controlled the House and Senate would work on it at that point.
It is always interesting to put elections in that, because I think we always have to remember that all of those legislative seats, House and Senate, are up for re-election right now. So some of what we see coming out of there may have something to do with that.
Yes, definitely, for sure.
Well, let's talk about, I want to talk about those kind of closed door meetings, but the second special session, we heard from House and Senate leaders that they had been talking in between those sessions and trying to make some compromises. It was a middle of the night vote. What compromises were made, and tell us more about that for second special session.
Yeah, so the bill they actually passed has more than two dozen sections. It kind of draws from both the Democratic and Republican proposals. It was, you know, people called it a compromise. That's pretty much it. They, on a lot of issues, they kind of found some middle ground to meet on. So it does ban police from using neck restraints and chokeholds, except as deadly force, which is common. So in a case in which an officer fears for their life or the life of others, they can use a neck restraint or a chokehold. It does prohibit departments from offering warrior-style training, and it also prohibits the Post Board from recognizing that warrior-style training as, like, proper education courses. It creates an independent unit of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which right now they'll investigate when police kill people, but this independent unit was created because people worried that there was a conflict of interest at the BCA currently. You know, right now they have to work with law enforcement all the time to bring charges in other cases, basically. And so they're saying, well, okay, now you're, you know, trying to investigate the people that you work with all the time. So there's an independent unit there now. You know, one of the things they did was they said to cities and counties, you can't require officers to live within police jurisdiction, but you can offer them incentives, which was something some cities say they already had the power to do, but was a little bit of a murky question in state law. They did end up approving a lot of like mental health and crisis intervention training. One of the things they did was they changed the arbitration system, which you know, right now officers can use to overturn, contest discipline and firings. So the big change there was under the current system, a union and an employer are given just this roster of independent arbitrators on a grievance case, and they can kind of just eliminate the ones that they don't agree with until they kind of reach a final arbitrator. But under the bill here, arbitrators will actually be randomly assigned to cases. So the union can't have a veto. an employer can't have a veto on a particular arbitrator. And now those arbitrators have to go through some implicit bias, racism, cultural competency training as well. So there's a little bit of a change to the system there. And I think lawmakers said they would often point to that as maybe one of the biggest changes, if not the biggest change in the policing bill.
What kind of critiques of this bill have you heard about?
Yeah, definitely from the right, from more conservatives, they'll say, for instance, there are some additions to the post board, some civilian memberships, a new council, and you know, I heard some one Republican House member who said, you know, it's not required that anybody on this citizen addition be from Greater Minnesota. So there were some concerns there, and certainly there was just some general concerns with, you know, what people see as is stepping too far into regulating policing from a state level, issues like that. From more of the left side in Minneapolis, some community groups, and even many lawmakers basically said, we just didn't think this went far enough. After police killed George Floyd, they felt like it was a, you know, a moment to really reshape policing. And they felt like a lot of this stuff could have gone further. For instance, you know, they could have lifted the ban on residency requirements for police officers, issues like that, or gone even further. So even Republican lawmakers like Senator Warren Limmer, he's from Maple Grove, he chairs the Senate's Judiciary Public Safety Committee, he helped craft this legislation. He even called it a good first step. And so I think that there's going to be a sort of an appetite to come back and maybe look at this issue in the future. But certainly there was some more intense criticism from, you know, Democratic legislators who said, you know, this just really didn't go far enough. And certainly in Minneapolis and St. Paul, there were those voices as well.
We're talking with Walker Ornstein. He covers state politics for MinnPost, nonprofit, nonpartisan journalism supported by their readers. So let's talk about the process a little bit. Even if you're not someone who is watching hearings or involved in that kind of thing, nobody likes to hear that things are decided in the middle of the night with behind closed doors. Tell us about how that process happened.
Yeah, so basically after lawmakers left the first special session, they had exchanged a couple offers publicly during the last hours of that first special session. But since then, we kind of got only little bits and snippets of what they were talking about, but we knew that they were meeting on things. And so House Speaker Melissa Hortman actually told us on Tuesday that Democrats and Republicans exchanged 14 offers between the end of the first special session and between July 6th and this weekend. So we didn't know what any of those offers were. We weren't involved in that at all. The public didn't know. And we kind of got to Monday, and lawmakers in the morning, they said, okay, we've reached what we think is a tentative agreement on policing bills, but we're still working out the final language, so we can't release anything. Finally, they gave the bill to lawmakers around 9 p.m. Monday, and they gave it to the public about an hour later. And they pretty much immediately went to the House floor. So I think they were on the House floor around maybe 10:45 p.m. So there was about an hour and a half or so, maybe a couple hours between when lawmakers saw it and voting began, and about an hour between when the public saw it and when voting began. You know, there were provisions in this bill that were not, you know, nobody had seen before. They were negotiated. It was new language, new law. Finally, the Senate passed the bill around 2 a.m. Tuesday. And so, you know, there was a lot of criticism. Senator Carrie Diedzic from Minneapolis, you know, she basically used her time on the Senate floor to, like, ask about, you know, what is in this bill? How does this measure work? You know, what about this? Have you thought about this? And her whole point was, you know, if we had had a hearing on this, if we could have brought in, you know, people to comment on this, maybe we could have ironed some of this out. I could have raised a good question here. But instead, you know, here's what we got. You know, I'm asking you questions at 1:30 in the morning on the Senate floor. So definitely a process that was extremely closed door. And I will just say, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, like normally when lawmakers are negotiating late at night, they might come out and give like a press conference and kind of update people on where they are. But they're negotiating at this point, it would appear primarily like on Zoom. And so they don't even kind of walk the hallways for reporters to check in with them. So it was a process that was completely in private.
As a journalist who informs the public about government and politics, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think as a reporter, we're always allowed to push for information, basically. That's our job, right? We can ask and look for information. And so for us, we wanted updates. We wanted to know what was going on, and we generally think that the public has the right to know what their lawmakers are working on. And, lawmakers hailed this as transformational or significant policy changes. It's probably the biggest policing, change to policing laws in years. Nobody knew about what they were voting on until, 10:45 p.m. And I will just also add that, lawmakers had no deadline here. It was a special session. They easily could have introduced this legislation, come back the next morning and sort of had a longer debate on this. They could have come back and held hearings and then passed it 2 days later or 3 days later. They'll say, I think there's a tendency when you strike a deal, you want to get that deal finished and you don't want, to lose members of your coalition that'll, hear from community members that say, hey, this bill doesn't go far enough or this bill goes too far. So there's a tendency there to act quickly, certainly, and there's other concerns as well. But really, they had no reason that they were voting, that they could not have voted the next day or later on. So it was ultimately avoidable. It's not like that there was some deadline set in the Constitution or anything. So for us, I just think we always want to push to know more when possible. And I think that major changes deserve to be talked about before they're voted on.
So this police reform bill passed the House and the Senate and then is sent to the governor. Has he signed? Do you think he'll sign?
Yes, he's expected to sign it this morning. I believe around 11 a.m. he's going to hold a press conference and sign the legislation.
Okay, so that passed. Bonding bill did not pass. Before we go, can you tell us a little bit about that process, what happened?
Yeah, of course. So the bonding bill, it's public construction projects. House Democrats and Senate Republicans have more or less agreed to a bonding bill. But bonding bills take sort of a supermajority to actually pass, which means that they need to involve they need votes from House Republicans, who are in the minority there, and Senate Democrats, who are in the minority in that chamber. And really, the hang-up is that House Republicans have said that Governor Tim Walz needs to release some of his peacetime emergency powers. The Republicans in that chamber have been vocal about the fact that they feel like he's acting unilaterally. COVID-19 is no longer an emergency, it's a problem, but that lawmakers can kind of work together to solve it, basically. And so they've been in negotiations with the governor and House Democrats over, is there anything that we can do to, sort of weaken or give up some of my emergency powers, but they haven't come to an agreement there. And so, House Democrats, they tried to, and Senate Republicans together, they tried to sort of tack on a tax bill that Republicans are favorable to with the bonding bill to try and earn some votes. But ultimately, it didn't work. And so they didn't pass anything. And, normally a bonding bill is one of the, I don't know if easier is the right word, but a more common bill to pass with bipartisan support because it has projects all around the state. Lawmakers want to bring home projects to their area. And policing seemed like maybe one of the more difficult things to work on, but in the end, it was the bonding bill that they couldn't really figure out.
And governors across the country, many still have executive powers because of the pandemic, right? Not just Governor Walz?
That is correct. I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it's the vast, vast majority.
Okay. There is a possibility of another special session?
Yeah, so as long as the governor keeps his peacetime emergency powers, the legislature has to come back in a special session. They're given the opportunity about once a month to vote on that. So So they can vote to rescind his powers, basically. And so we'll keep coming back into session. And Senate Republicans have voted twice now to end the emergency powers, but House Democrats have voted to keep the emergency powers, essentially. So it's expected that they're, you know, that will continue, basically. That pattern will continue. But as long as Walz has those emergency powers, they'll keep coming back in every 30 days.
Interesting, because, of course, Minnesota is the only legislature in the country that has a split majority.
Yeah, between the houses. Definitely creates some dynamics there. A political, you know, it's like you said, yeah, we're the only one.
Well, and I mentioned the, you know, the election in November. Does that, I don't know if you would know this, but does that mean bonding might happen if there's another special session? Because that is going to look good for people running for office.
Well, it's actually interesting. I think lawmakers kind of said the outlook for a Melissa Hortman, the House Speaker, said the outlook for a binding bill in August is actually murky. And I know our state government reporter, another state government reporter, Peter Callahan, wrote that election politics actually make the ability to compromise even shakier in September and October. So it's possible it could happen. There's some complications to approving bonding later in the year, some legal complications as well. But I think that it's not a given that lawmakers would want to pass a bonding bill simply to make themselves look good for elections. It might actually make it harder. In fact, I think House Republicans are using, obviously, the emergency powers as something that they want to bring to the public and say, we feel like Democrats are abusing their power, you know, vote for us. And so I think that that's a powerful election issue as well.
It's Walker Ornstein, reporter for State Politics for MinnPost. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.